out parking tickets and leave me alone. Stick to something you know about.
Listen, my daughter was about your age. Then she met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You still believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet!
Don't hurt me, please!
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
Hello, and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I'm Richard. Folks, we have a person to talk to, an actual manly man who stands too tall to reach the normal microphone. We had to scoogee one up his leg, secret style, over the last 3 weeks. Now it's near his mouth so we can record. I'm talking, of course, about the worst introduction I've ever given anyone. Jacob Gustafson.
Thank you. You know, no, that's good. I like that. Also, bonus points for being able to say my name correctly. You just trotted that right out and just rolled right off your tongue. That's great.
Well, I used to work at the circulation department of my library, so I got to get in contact with a lot of very strange names that make yours seem very, very normal by comparison. So.
See, my name is normal. It's phonetic. It doesn't take any weird, like, people want to throw a bunch of flavor on it when they say it. Like, I've gotten so many weird pronunciations and I'm like, dude, it's just phonetic. Like, you just, it's literally just how it's spelled. That's how you say it. And they always want to throw a goo. They're like, Mr. Gustafsson. And I'm like, why are we going over these peaks and valleys? It's just Gustafsson, like Gustafsson.
I know why. I know why. It's because of frickin' Frozen, because of Gustav, right?
I guess, but it's been that way since I was a wee child. Like,
oh, okay.
I don't think I ever had a teacher that ever didn't butcher my name, which is funny because it's unbearably common, like in the Midwest. It's like Smith. Or whatever, like it's super common, except where I live, it is not. In fact, I don't even like. I'm a teacher, and I don't even make my students say my name. I just have them call me Mr. G.
Yes,
because I'm like, listen, let's just make this easy. And they frequently have names that are very difficult for me to say, and I'm like, look, you're gonna butcher my name. I'm gonna butcher your name. Let's just cut to the chase. You can just call me Mr. G. You don't have to. We don't have to climb that mountain. And please tell me if I say your name wrong, because I probably will.
And you're like, and I'm calling all of you Randy. Folks, my pal Jacob here, we go pretty far back. We've known each other for several years now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is your – well, unfortunately for the audience, unfortunately for my failure, this is your first time on the Doom Show.
Was it? No, we were just talking about that. Was it?
I think
you on my podcast?
I was only on Good Movies for Bad People. You did that show with our pal Christian many, many moons ago. And I think I was on twice, maybe once. It was definitely Brad and I guested to do Perfume of the Lady in Black. I don't remember.
I thought that was your episode for your show.
No. Not to my knowledge.
That doesn't seem like a movie that we would have covered. It seems like a film that you would have covered.
We definitely.
How strange.
Brad and I picked it. I think y'all gave us a choice.
Okay.
A choice of choices.
I had no idea. I all these years I've thought that I was on yours. How about that?
Hey, we'll download it.
We're fixing it now.
That's right. We're fixing it with nothing but tape. We're taping ourselves to each other.
That's
the,
right.
But yeah, you are an author now. You have written frickin' a trilogy of books. You've written the awful, awesome books, A Journey Through the Wide World of So Bad They're Good Movies. And folks, they're on Amazon. Check them out. They're full. And I want to say this as weirdly as possible. They're full of love for movies.
Why, thank you. Yes, they are. A lot of times when people talk about the so bad they're good, it's very unkind.
Yes.
And very, I'm better than you. And look at how stupid these people are who made this stupid movie. And I'm so much smarter than they are. And I don't feel that way at all about these films. I have a lot of love for them. I would be just as excited to meet these filmmakers as I would to meet, you know, more appreciated, shall I say, directors and writers and actors. You know, like these people are filmmakers too. It's just they just make really like alien, strange films that are entertaining in a different way, but they're still entertaining. And no matter what, it's incredibly difficult to make a film.
Oh God.
Like super hard. So yeah. Like all these people have done more than I've ever done. So I can't sit here and lord myself above them. So yeah, that's I would like to think that that's the tone of the book, is that it's more appreciative and joyful than negative and snide.
Yes, your enthusiasm for your subjects really comes across, and that's, you know, knowing your tastes in films after listening to you talk about movies for so long, like I knew something like this. I knew these were going to be something along those lines of just, I know you love this shit, so it's going to come across in the pages. The other thing I'm really, really stoked about, especially when we think about the frickin', dare I say it, the post-pandemic bull slap world. Right now we're in pandemic bull slap world, is a sense of building a community of people that are going to join together and bond over these movies. You even have a guide, like instructions on how to host a movie night.
Yeah, well, for sure. And that's honestly, like, the whole point of the book is that I want you to watch these movies. It's not that I'm trying to scare you away from them. It's that, no, you should watch this. And if you're going to watch this, you have to watch it with other people because it's way more fun. In fact, some of them are unbelievably fun to watch with people, but would probably be about as much fun as smashing your thumb with a hammer by yourself. You know, like when you watch them together, somehow it like transmutes the movie into something that is so amazing, but by yourself, it's not the same experience at all. Like you have to watch them with other humans. And so that is a big part of the book, is to try to encourage people to watch them with with others. And that's why I have the guide in there, like, because I did it. That's actually how I made my circle of friends. Oftentimes people like you and I, who are like way, way far in the weeds when it comes to films, it's like we can't really talk to people about like the latest Marvel movie, because I don't know about you, but I usually don't care. I'm like, whatever it is, like I would never have seen any of them. Not to, again, they're fun, whatever. Like yeah. If you like them, you like them. I'm glad that you like them. I'm just not personally not excited about them. I've watched many of them because I have children and I watch them with my children. But for me personally, I'm not like, oh yeah, I got to go out and go see this thing. It's more like I want to look under the rocks and like rotten logs and find the weird, creepy, crawly movies that nobody else is paying attention to. That's what I'm excited about, which, you know, makes me a crazy weirdo, and it's hard to find people who want to engage with that with you. And so the guide is there at the beginning to kind of help you have like the most positive experience you can with people. Like if you've convinced people to come over and watch one of these like movies, which is already a non-starter for some, because you're like, it's terrible, you should come watch it. It's like, what? I'm not gonna do that. Like, can't we just watch like something that's good? No, it's terrible, and that's why we have to watch it. You should make it like as pleasant of an experience for them as possible, so they'll come back and do it again. Right. So
when I, you know, I'm waiting for like Whispering Corridors Part 6 to come out, right. I'm gonna rewatch Loki because I am a shill for Marvel. Like,
what gets me interested and excited about cinema is somebody coming from left field and showing me something that I haven't seen before, right. that I can't predict.
That's what I love about like some of the stuff that Vinegar Syndrome is digging up, because, you know, we're all waiting for something like Death Screams, which is like the gold at the bottom of the frickin' river slasher where the only version anyone ever saw of that was the fucking nightmare VHS version where all of the night scenes are invisible to your naked eye. Like, it's so hard to see what's going on. But then for every home run, like obvious home run of finding this slasher that everyone's been waiting on, like people like me have been waiting on, there's 16 movies that like Vinegar Syndrome or Severin will dig up where you're like, what the hell is this thing? Yes. Where like the religious,
and it'll look beautiful,
right? It's amazing. Like, I mean, obviously Death Screams looks freaking gorgeous, but they put out Day of Judgment, which is the Christian slasher. They made a slasher movie that it was initially began. It's very obvious that those slasher sequences are slapped onto the movie. It was a religious film to teach people not to be sinners. And in order to drive the point home and to make a profit, they went ahead and slapped some decapitations and scythe slashings in it. And I'm not saying I enjoyed that movie. I actually kind of hated it. But it's like the fact that it even exists in 2021 for people to watch, I guess 2022 right. by the time this episode comes out, is just freaking bonkers to me.
Or they put out Bloodbeat, which was one that was like,
right,
like who was clamoring for? I mean, I had seen Bloodbeat because I had found like an obscure like VHS dub, and when they put that out, I was like, you got to be kidding me! Yeah. You put out Bloodbeat and Winter Beast. You know, like these movies that are just like, wait a minute, like, really? This, what?
Really unusual. This, yeah. People had a vision.
This is on Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're right. And I'm never going to listen to a Marvel podcast. Like, I'm not, like, I don't care. Never going to listen to any bullshit like that. No. But I'll listen to your podcast because you find all kinds of hidden gems and your personal interests are not, there's like a Venn diagram. Where like there's an overlap there, but like both of us are definitely lovers of like cinema. That anyway, there's a Venn diagram, but we're both like out there on the edges.
Yes.
And so I really like listening to your podcast because then you can expose me to stuff that maybe you find is, I don't know, like a no brainer. Like, how could you not know this thing exists? But I don't know what exists because I'm not like totally obsessed with Gialli. I like Gialli and I watch them throughout the year, but I don't watch like a ton, but listening to your podcast always makes me want to watch more. And the same thing with slashers. Like slashers are not my favorite at all. Like, I like monster movies.
Yeah.
But then when I listen to you talk about it, I'm like, man, I think I gotta dig in there.
What is this maniac I'm listening to seeing these friggin' things?
And then the Venn diagram overlaps when you do an episode with Jeffrey because it's always something weird.
Oh yeah,
like Tales from the Quad Dead Zone. It's like, oh, that's one that I've seen.
See? There you go.
You know what I mean? So there is like an interesting overlap between our interests, and that is super cool and exciting to me versus like, I'm going to listen to two guys talk about like Marvel movies.
Right.
Like, I don't care. I want to listen to you. I don't want to listen to like two dudes who know everything about Marvel. That doesn't interest me very much personally.
And same token for you is when I flipped through all three of these books, like I thought I knew what was going to be in the horror one. And I thought I knew what was going to be in the sci-fi one. The only one that I had any success with, like just predicting what was going to be in the pages of the frickin' volume was the action one. Like, cause I think I picked up a lot more of your tastes in action movies. And still all three volumes, my percentage of what I've seen to what I've never heard of, or maybe I've seen the cover before of the VHS, is ridiculous. Like the gap is so wide. I could spend years, Jacob, tracking down all these frickin' movies to watch in every volume. Even the horror one, I'm like, what?
What is this?
Well, and I've got volume two of each one of these books. They're already written. I have a guy who's editing them. They're the same length. And I feel like volume two is better. Like they're more obscure picks in all three volumes. Like I feel like they're better. I feel like volume two is better. And I am writing volume three. I mean, it's the same thing with you, right? Like, oh, yeah. It's the exact same thing. It's like you think, well, maybe I've covered it all, but no, I haven't.
So the first volume of Awful Awesome is the action one. And
yes,
you were very kind to send this to me, and I freaking love it. And I'm like, my buddy Jason, who I've shown three or four movies from that Girls and Guns set, the you know, like mm-hmm. Hard Ticket to Hawaii and freaking
right, the Andy Sedaris Trigger movies, yeah.
This book, I think if I showed this to him, that'd be it, because you know, like he's loving this kind of stuff. So I should probably just get this for him. I'll make it a little stocking stuffer for his New Year's present, since
you should.
Freaking Christmas is over.
You should. There's lots of good stuff that's that's similar,
yes.
But different. That's yeah. I mean, for me, like the go-to, if you want to get a whole bunch of people together at your house, and you want to watch, although I guess today you can't, a sensible
That's right. That's
number
right.
of people at your house to watch an awful awesome movie, So Bad Is Good. You like action is the mine that it's the hole that you can never get it all out. Like it's just, there's so much bad, hilarious, over the top macho vanity action movies, which are the best. Like just a little pro tip. If you're looking through on like Tubi or whatever, 'cause that's where a lot of this stuff lives. If the same guy wrote it, directed it, and starred in it, you got a strong chance that it is going to be hilarious, because there's no filter. There was nobody to say, hey, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea, because he's just doing it all. And those are usually nice. The most fun. That's what I look for when I see that, like when the credits are going by and I'm like, I'm paying attention. Okay, who produced it? Okay, I'm seeing that name. Who wrote it? Okay. Same guy. Who's the director? Okay, we're 3 for 3. Is it the actor? All right. This is going to be some macho ego stroking. He's going to be like a secret agent and a sex machine, and he's going to have quips that are yes. terrible, but everybody thinks are funny. You know, like that's the movie. They're usually the most dad right. movies ever. You know, like just total male fantasies. That are just so bad. Those are usually winners. So for yeah, sure.
I flipped through the action today to kind of grab two that I've seen that I would love to hear any of your thoughts on. The first one from action is The Holy Flame of the Martial World from 1983.
Ooh, okay. So I have I got a good story about that one. Well, sort of. So I used to have a bad movie night here locally in my town. For the listeners, I live in a town that has 40,000 people, and we're a half an hour from anybody. So like it's isolated enough and small enough that it's very hard to find anybody who's interested in this kind of weird stuff. And so I was working from home. I had no opportunity to even meet coworkers. So I was like, gosh, I really need to like meet people. And I want to meet people that want to watch wacky stuff. And so I went to my local coffee shop and who had like a very stuffy movie night. And I said, I want to do that, but I want to do that with bad movies. And they let me do it. And I started showing movies once a week. I did it for 3 years. I screened like 150 films. And the whole intent, and it may sound pathetic, I don't know, it's either genius or pathetic, and I don't know which. I'm going to go with pagenius. maybe that's what it is. It's a little bit of both. I was like, listen, I want to meet people, so I'm going to set up this event. The whole point was just to meet friends. Like, that was it. I just wanted to meet people. I just wanted to make friends. And so I created an environment in which would attract them. So it was like, it was a trap. I set a trap for people who were funny and outgoing and like adventurous, and it worked. And now I have a whole group of friends, and we still get together regularly to watch dumb stuff. And like, they don't even like, it doesn't matter. Like I can literally just say movie and they'll be like, yeah, we'll come. like they don't care at this point. Like I'll tell them what we're watching and they're like, it doesn't matter. Like we'll, if we can make it, we're coming. I don't care what you're showing. But so I showed The Holy Flame in the Martial World, which is a Shaw Brothers movie. And it's a late era Shaw Brothers movie when they didn't know what people wanted anymore. They had been making the same movie forever. And I love Shaw movies. That new Arrow set is insane. But this was like in an era where they were like, I don't know, let's just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks because we need a hit. And so for this one, it's like the whole movie is like on double speed. Like everyone talks unbelievably fast, like hysterically fast, and everybody moves really fast and the plot moves really fast. And I warned the group because the whole group had never, I don't think anybody at this coffee shop had ever seen a single Shaw Brothers movie. And they might know who Jackie Chan was, maybe, but only because of Rush Hour. You know, like that's the level of like film fan that I had. And so like I kept pausing the movie because I was like, it's only been on for 9 minutes. And they were just like, get out of here. Only been 9 minutes. Because there's just so much that's thrown at you so fast that it feels, it doesn't feel like boring. It's just like so much information overload. And I'd be like, we're 28 minutes. We're 28 minutes into this. And they were just like, everyone was just like roar. And they were just like, oh my God. Like, and they loved it. They had a blast. They were like, that was one of the most outrageous film experiences that we've ever had. They're like, that was incredible. Like they weren't like, oh, it's 28 minutes. Oh my God. How are we going to slog through this? They were just like, I can't believe how much has happened in 14 minutes, like, because the movie's on like turbo speed the whole film.
That's incredible. Great. Yeah. So sort of like what you're doing on a much smaller scale, because we're still waiting for more people to participate. Scott McDonald and I, Scott of EuroCultAV.com, we do Movie Party Crew the last Saturday of every month, where we pick a movie and we tell everybody we're watching it on Twitter, and we're like, hey, come hang out with us and frickin' we'll do a hashtag like we just did Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, : Better Watch Out. And we did the hashtag was FrankenRicky, because I thought people would be confused if I did hashtag Christmas and Twin Peaks, because the movie has two cast members from Twin Peaks in it. So I thought I better make it a little more deliver more on the promise with FrankenRicky. But yeah, so we just hang out and watch the movie, and it's really just an excuse because Scott and I are lazy about actually doing a podcast together, where we're just hanging out and talking about the movie, and hopefully our pal Shane Migliavacca will show up too, and Tyler Miller might show up too. And so it's just the four of us, probably costing ourselves a lot of followers. Because for an hour and a half on the last Saturday of every month, we're intensely tweeting about what the fuck.
Like, God damn. Like, stop. Dude, stop, I hate you. Up my phone. Mute, like, mute, I don't. Mute.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I love that you freaking got people in on it, because one of the greatest joys I've ever had in my life was showing my friend Jordan, who had never seen an Italian film outside of Fellini. I showed him Case of the Bloody Iris, and he was literally bouncing up and down on my couch, pointing and shouting at the conclusion of the film when you find out who the killer is. And I was watching the movie, because obviously I've seen Case of the Bloody Iris 900 million times, but just watching his childlike joy at seeing finally the reveal of the killer and being like totally down with all of it. It was so amazing.
I agree. That's one of the more fun things as well. If I have somebody who enters my movie group that's new, and again, I don't do it publicly anymore. I stopped doing that at, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. I just couldn't fit it into my schedule. But you know, like if I've got somebody who new wants to join, which was happening regularly pre-COVID. Post-COVID, it's rough, but we'll get there. But anyway, it would be like, hey, you know, I would confer with my more hardened, awful, awesome friends and say like, okay, so we should probably like break them in on something that we know they're going to enjoy. Yeah. And, you know, so we would trot out like Samurai yep. Cop or Miami Connection or Road to Revenge or something like that. That's just like, if you can't get with this, then you can't watch anything with us. And then it would just kind of be like, all right, but you all have to shut up and don't say anything. Like,
yes,
like just let it happen. Yes. We all know what's going to happen. We all know we're all ready for like the lines. Cause like, dude, I've shown Samurai Cop to people to get them into my world. I've probably watched that movie. I don't know how many times, probably close to 10 times at this point. Like I've watched it so many times because it's like, it's such a good gateway drug film where it's like, if you're into this, if you're ever going to get into this, like Samurai Cop is like such a good entry level. Like it's so good. Like, and if you're down with, and usually it's like, all right, so when's the next one? You know, that's usually the response. If I pick a good one, if I pick one that's bona fide, that's just like, yep, this is the one. It's like, all right, yeah. So do y'all do this every week? Cause what's next week? What are we doing next week? Like that's usually what I get, which is good, and that's how I know a person is cool. Is like, you know, if you can, like if you watch like, you know, 25 films a year and one of them was Samurai Cop and you enjoyed the hell out of it,
my work is done.
All right, it's game on. It's game on. Yeah, nice. It's game on. Let's go.
Before I pick the next movie, let me stop this file. I don't want
it to get too big. I like to make sure it doesn't glitch out.
So the next film from action that I have picked, you did mention it just a few seconds ago. Of course, it's Miami Connection, 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Yep. That one I bought at a record store. I turned in like a bunch of stuff and I got credit, and I had just sort of, this was like way a long time ago. It had like just come out on DVD and Blu-ray. I didn't even have a Blu-ray player at the time. This was like, oh my God, more than 10 years ago.
Wow.
And, definitely more than 10 years ago. Might even be like whenever that originally came out, which was a long time. I picked it up because I was like, yeah, I think I heard something about this. And I brought it over to my friend's house and we were both just in love. We were like, this is so much fun. Like, oh my gosh, you know, the theme song, yep. and just the joy of the film. One thing that makes the film so much fun is the "we can do it" vibe of it.
Yes.
You know, it's like a poorly drawn picture of a giraffe from a child, and you know they worked really hard on it. And like you just like it so much better than like a really good artist drawn giraffe. It's like, no, this is going in a frame and going on the wall. This is so much better. I like it a lot more than I like your interpretation of this giraffe. I like Miami Connection's interpretation of an action movie versus like an actual action movie. Like it's just so much fun. So joyful.
When I showed this to my friend, the sure sign that it was a hit with him was during the fake slow motion punch in the mouth, where the actor, yep. the lead actor makes the other guy hold his fist in his mouth.
Yes.
For a weirdly long, uncomfortable stretch of the movie. And my friend, as soon as it stopped, my friend looked at me and was like, could you please rewind that? And he had never asked me to do that for a movie before. And now that's his thing. When we watch something, he's like, can you please rewind that? I need to see that again. So like in some dummy deaths and other action movies, he's like, whoa, 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 go back.
or YK Kim pinching the nose of the person that he's doing a demonstration with his toes.
Oh yeah. Oh, the foot.
Like it's just like the most, it's so invasive and disgusting. And like, it's like a total power move. Like,
why did
listen,
you do that?
I'm a grandmaster in Taekwondo. If I want to pinch your nose with my toes, I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And there's nothing you can do to stop me.
Oh my God.
And I think it's hilarious and you think it's disgusting, and you know, yeah, it's something, man. It's here's a weird, very obscure reference or factoid. The guy who directed that, he's a Korean director who had done a lot of films in South Korea, came to the United States. He actually made a film before Miami Connection called LA Warriors, I think. Ooh. Is what it's called. And in the film, it came out in 1985. And in the film, one of the thugs in the movie, the Tufts, is the guy who played Biff in Back to the Future.
What?
And it came out the same year as Back to the Future.
What?
So, like, you could watch this movie. Because I was we had watched Miami Connection like 5 times with my friends. And I'm like, you know, we should watch this other movie from the same director. I've really been meaning to watch it. And it's fun. It's not like Miami Connection, but it is fun. And I was like, you know, that guy looks like Biff. That's weird. And then my friend looked it up and he's like, dude, it is Biff. That is like the weirdest. Yep. Weirdest career ever. Like, in the same year, you don't have any speaking lines. You're in this like obscure, crappy martial arts movie where you're just like getting beat up. And then you're in the same movie that where you play an iconic role that you will never escape.
Yep.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's just what a like, acting is a weird career, man, that you could do both of those in the same year.
I can only imagine. It's like, Liette and I play that game all the time where we're watching these movies and I'm like, oh my God, is that so-and-so from so-and-so? And she's like, no, nah. And I go, I'm like, I get the frickin' IMDb. I'm like, it is. And she's like, okay, okay. And then once in a while, she'll get me so good. She'll just be like, you know, that's the girl from da-da-da. I'm like, no. And the person will be 12 in the movie we're watching. And I don't know how she can recognize this person who, you know, after puberty became this other person.
I'm pretty good with that too.
That's awesome.
I can spot that. The movie is actually LA Street Fighters, sorry. But yes, it's right. from 1985. And yeah, that's the weird factoid. Oh, is that it's God. Got Biff. And it's the same director as Miami Connection, who was not YK Kim. YK Kim did not direct Miami. I mean, he like, I don't know. He says he like co-directed her or something. I mean, who knows?
I'm but sure like, he wants that would help him if it were true.
yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible. I mean, right. Who knows? Maybe the other guy walked off the set. I mean, it's not, he wasn't part of any of the reunion shows at the Draft House or anything. Okay. And I don't think he's wanted to have anything to do with the revival. It's just been YK Kim who's been interested in that. But YK Kim, I think, also wrote like a motivational book and like also a business book.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I feel like I need to own those.
It seems like the type. Yeah, that's great. Hopefully not a Ponzi scheme. Hopefully it's actual business success.
I don't know, mate. If it was a Ponzi scheme, that might make it even more fun to read. Because it would be like a Ponzi scheme from like 25 years ago.
Oh my God. So Miami Connection, obviously, made in Florida. We got a segue into horror, but we'll stay in Florida because from your horror volume, I have chosen another pair of films. And the first one, of course, is Jacko from 1995.
Yes. I don't know if it's true or not, but I read that Jacko was made on a bet that Fred Olin Ray gave the director a little bit of footage. He had like the last footage of
John Carradine.
Yes. And he also had footage of Cameron Mitchell that were completely unrelated, shot like probably in different decades. And he basically said, like, you know, I'm gonna produce this movie, here's the footage, I dare you to make a movie that utilizes these two clips. Mm-hmm. And that's where Jacko comes from.
Oh my God.
Jacko is fun. It's not my favorite in the book by any means.
Oh, no.
It has its moments. There's some very angry conservative people in the movie who like, who totally begrudge giving away candy for free because you should pay for everything, which is quite funny. And their deaths are very funny.
They're outrageous.
As well.
Yes.
Linnea Quigley is in it as a babysitter.
Yeah,
that's right. She's a babysitter. And I can't remember if she gets naked in or not. She probably does.
She probably does. Yeah.
Doesn't she have to like take a shower or something?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Linnea Quigley's like one of those. She's one of those actresses that I'm always. There's certain actresses that. Another one from the action volume, Cynthia Rothrock. Like I feel uncomfortable with their nudity because I like them so much. Yeah. Like it's just like, you know, you don't need to do that.
Right.
Like. Which isn't to say that any woman should feel like she has to or whatever, but like with them in particular, it's like, you're so cool. You don't need like,
that's
you're enough.
That is why Sorority Babes and the Slime Ball Bowl-O-Rama is so good, because Linnea doesn't get naked in that one and she owns that fucking movie.
Yeah. Like she doesn't need to, but she's often like pretty much in every single movie she's required to. And it's always like, I don't need that. Like, first of all, you've done it so much that if I did require that, there's many other films that I can peruse.
And it's 1995 and you're still doing the nude scenes. Like, not that she wasn't amazing to look at, but you're like, dude, where are you in your career? In 95, because, you know,
I feel like we need like an autobiography.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Can you imagine the stories she would have? I mean, she worked with so many on so many different films. Like, I'm sure her filmography is like over 100.
And her life was crazy. Like, I'm not going to give any details here, but back in the day, I found her email because it was all over her website. You just freaking email her, and I emailed her out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And just had a couple interactions with her, and her life sounded bonkers. And I was like, damn, dude, like, good luck. You know, like, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she's still working. She's still getting work, and she goes to the conventions and stuff. And it's like, God, give me an autobiography. I want to know more about all those David Dakota movies that you made. Yep. You know, I want to know more about like that level of filmmaking, and like she never turned down a role, and she must have the most insane stories. I mean, she could probably write a whole book just about her experiences.
That's
on
the
Return of the Living Dead.
I interviewed Brink Stevens through email years ago, and she's very well written. Like, very, she's this freaking brilliant woman, and she wrote so many amazing responses to my questions that I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, bro, Brink, bro, write a freaking book.
Yeah. She's another one that, you know, she was always like, all those scream queens, they're always sold on their like, oh, they're going to take your top off or whatever. But it's like, I don't need you to, Brink. You're interesting. Like, you're engaging. Neither one of them need to take off their clothes in order for me to pay attention to their performance. Like, they're very interesting. I always get excited when Linnea shows up in one of the many garbage movies that I watch. I'm like, hey, it's Quigley. All right.
Before I move on, I just saw Jacko for the first time this year, because Liette and I were trying to flesh out our, so to speak, our frickin' Halloween viewing. And I'm going to be honest, the poster for Jacko was an instant no. I hated it. It just looks dumb. It's just a big old jack-o'-lantern, generic jack-o'-lantern man, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope, hard pass. I don't want to see this. And then I watched it and was like, what the hell is wrong with this? Is so great. Because it is not good. I will, yes. It is definitely... in your book, I'm leaning more towards awful, but it just charms my pants off. I just love the charm of it.
Yeah, it has moments. It has, it's definitely not a waste to watch it. It for sure has its moments. There is a lot of fun to be had. And one thing I will say about every single book or that I've written in all the reviews. When it comes to these films, first of all, my opinion may not be yours. So don't, like, if anybody who bought the book was like, oh, he said this one's not good, but this is totally my jam. Go watch it. You might be like, he is full of beans. This is the best movie I've ever seen. It's just one man's opinion. And it often really comes down to who you watch it with. And whether or not they're enjoying it and engaging with it, because that makes all the difference as well. I mean, I've read reviews. Like, I literally today, I just got the new Bleeding Skull book in the mail, and I was thumbing through it and enjoying it because it's like, oh my God, there's so much stuff in here that is like perfect for my books. And there's things in here that I've seen, and I'm like looking at the ones that I've seen. And like compare views, and their experiences are often not mine. Like, they're like, oh, this movie sucks. Like, don't watch it. And I'm like, man, yes. I love that. Like Hellspa, that movie's hilarious. Nobody's seen it. It's way too long, but somehow earns it. It's like a really dumb spa related slasher movie that is just like, of all the spa slasher movies, it's the one that nobody pays attention to or even knows exists. And it's just like, oh my God, like, you know, the locations are clearly somebody's basement and not like a gym, and like the evil gym like cuts off some dude's finger, I think it is, but they use like the most unwieldy device to do it with, and it's just,
wow.
I've just had so much fun, and I watched it by myself, and I'm like, God damn, I really need to watch this with other people. And then I read Bleeding Skull, and they're like, yeah,
yes,
don't bother. And it's like, but I really enjoyed it. So, you know, my hope is that it's more like putting a spotlight on these films. In your case, you didn't know they existed, and maybe you'll just be like, well, you know, Jacob said it's really boring, but right. I'm going to give it a shot anyway. Maybe you'll just be tickled by it. So if it sounds cool, watch it, and don't necessarily take my opinion as gospel. A lot of the films that are in my books have been test driven by my friends, you know, and then a good chunk of them are ones I watch by myself, or maybe I watch it with my wife. But, you know, the ones that go over really well with my friends, I usually try to make a big point of that in the books, you know, because it's like, it's fine for me to say it, but if, you know, if I got 10 people that are all saying, oh my God, that was amazing, you know, you got a winner. And it really does depend on who watches it with you. Cause if they just are hating life the whole time, then of course you're not going to like it.
The way I got into reviewing movies, my first garbage ass reviews I wrote back in frickin' 2005, 2004, were all because I vehemently disagreed with the reviews I read that inspired me to watch it. Or what really drives me now, those reviews you mentioned, like the don't watch this, you know, like I have an Italian horror book. It's called, the fucking title is so inspired, bruh. It's called Italian Horror. And this dude hates Italian horror. And the whole book is a no-go, just about. Like, you can take your classics that pretty much, you know, everybody agrees on, that, you know, people, when they think of Italian horror, you know, the top five movies come up, and he loves those. But everything that we've covered on the Doom Show from Italy that isn't your stock stuff, he hated. And it's hilarious. Like, that book is a big reason that got me into writing about films.
It's almost like, why did you keep writing these, dude? God. Like, why did you make a book of this? Is it like, I don't get it. Like, if you don't have an appreciation for it, then what are we doing here?
Los Angeles, the year 2006. Citywide crimes increased 300%, and a gang called the Hell Riders control most of the city.
Zone.
The Hell Zone, where laws don't exist and murder is the local currency.
Good day to kill a cop.
Now that wasn't very neighborly, was it?
Lab says it might be AIDS vaccine.
Well, if the Hell Siders are running this stuff, let us go undercover.
Anyone can visit my club. if they want to play.
A pair of tough cops on an undercover mission enter the Hell Zone, where a criminal mastermind has created a game, an arena of death ring fighters. Their job, to expose an illegal AIDS vaccine racket.
You use a stick like you've used one before.
Yeah, well, I practice a little.
But they discover that skill doesn't always determine the victor in the arena.
It's run by a computer.
It was Drexel.
Get you out of there.
Look, we have a contact.
It's too dangerous.
Hey, that guy's a cop.
I have a message to give to your husband.
I'm going into the zone to get Drexel.
LAPD.
Rock and roll division.
Firepower.
Moving on to my second pick from the horror volume, Devilfish, 1984, from our boy, Lambava.
Yes.
Which is, you know, I thought it was a Jaws ripoff, and it technically is, but it has no shark. Nope.
Nope.
It's a sea beast of unknown something.
Yeah, giant tooth with, fishy of
with,
not
with
shark.
Tentacles.
Origin. Yes. God, oh boy, that's one that I watched about a million years ago.
We did it for Movie Party Crew pretty recently, and it it is so weird. Like, it has one of my favorite double endings where the movie's winding down, we're done, we're out of here. Freaking let's freaking swab the poop deck on this fishing boat, we're done. And then all of a sudden they call in the cops and the SWAT team on airboats. God, I guess this is another Florida movie. And they're running around with night scopes and machine guns to go find the fucking devil fish at night. And now the whole movie's at night in the swamps.
Of course it is. Yeah, the Italians loved shooting at either getting establishing shots in Florida and then shooting the whole
Miami
thing
Golem.
Somewhere else but pretending like it's Florida, right? Or shooting in Florida. Like, there's just something about it, like, it makes you wonder what the like it wasn't Connecticut or like I don't
Utah,
know West Virginia or something. It's like, why there's got to be a story there of like, well, okay, well, why right. not Louisiana? Why not? Like, if you wanted something like tropical, you know, there's anything in the Gulf would probably work.
It's
Florida?
How come my town, my Tampa, why the hell don't we have any incentives for filmmakers? We have had so few movies shot here. It's embarrassing. Like, of course, not talking about the indie people, Tampa, with all of our freaking death metal heads, they all just want to make freaking horror movies. So as far as like indie horror, Tampa does rather well, but like freaking any like Hollywood money or foreign money coming in, I would just love to find out if for like 3 months in 1982 there were like six films shot here by like Claudio Fragasso and Bruno Mattei and, you know, and like
right.
Umberto Lenzi, but everybody went to Daytona and Miami and the Everglades and
it is odd.
Yep. My city sucks.
You know, thumbing through my horror book, I think I can definitively say Volume 2 has much better selection. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you feel that way too.
I'm looking at it.
I'm like, you know, this is good.
You got Killer
this...
Clowns from Outer Space. You got Jack Frost. Iced is in here. This is a fucking hot book, dude.
Oh man, Jack Frost. Those movies are so much fun. And everybody sleeps on the second one.
Yeah, because it came out in the 90s. Like, everyone's like, nope.
Everybody's like, oh yeah, we'll watch Jack Frost, but we're, you know, Jack Frost 2 is a bridge too far. Listen, It is not a bridge too far. That one is bonkers as well. See? I had so much fun watching that with, and again, I watched that one publicly, and we had so much fun. MVD is putting that out on Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
It's coming out. I saw it. I was like, oh my gosh, Jack Frost Drew is getting a Blu-ray. Like, that's got to be like the last sign of the apocalypse or something. Like
and no, full disclosure, I am one of those people who did not watch it. So I am, based on your recommendation, I am totally down with it.
Like, it's, I mean, if you enjoy Jack Frost, which is totally stupid.
Oh, it's wild.
And it's, yes, and very wild. The second one is gorier. And it has like little Jack Frost evil snowballs. Oh, boy. In it, and it's shot on video. It has lower budget, more gore, and it's just, yeah, man, like it's fun. Like, it's for us, we enjoyed it a lot. Like, and I was a big roll of the dice. I had never seen it before, and I was like, I don't know, man, this might be one of my really bad decisions, of which I showed movies publicly that I had never seen before. Mm-hmm. I did not preview them first, and boy, did I make a mistake.
I've done that.
In one particular instance, I had a friend who needed a ride, and we were watching what was it? Angel Fist. We were watching Angel Fist, which is I believe it's a Sergio Santiago movie made in the Philippines, and it's like crime and intrigue and kickboxing and stuff. And I had to leave, and I was like, I gave the remotes to my friend. I was like, hey, can you just like make sure everything goes okay? And I got to go pick this guy up, and I'm going to bring him because he wants to come enjoy. And as soon as I left, apparently there was like a ridiculous amount of like nudity.
Oh, no.
And he was just like, oh my God, oh my God. Cause like I would always fast forward through the sex scenes publicly. Cause it's like, that's weird. I mean, yeah. Sit in a room with like 15 people and there's just like gross, you know, graphic, big haired 80s sex going on. No, we're fast forwarding through this. We're getting past it. We're not, that's too uncomfortable. And then when I came back and he was like, dude, there was so much stuff I had to fast forward through while you were gone. I was like, I was gone for 10 minutes. He's like, I know, the whole time you were gone, there was just stuff that I had to fast forward through. And it was really awkward. And thanks for that. And I felt really bad. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to have put you in that position.
My friend, who's been coming over for movie nights, his wife and him had to live apart for a while because she was still finishing up her schooling in another state. So he got indoctrinated into watching movies with me before she even moved into town. So when she finally joined him, he'd been talking up like, oh, watching movies with Richard, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, I'm excited. And I picked an unseen. I picked a known crazy shit, which was Strip Nude for Your Killer, which if you don't know someone's wife or significant other of any gender, don't spring Strip Nude for Your Killer on them. Just don't.
See, and I have notes about that in my books too. Like, hey, by the way, this one has like crazy amounts of nudity. Yep. So maybe just be aware of that. Or there's like lots of sex. Yeah, like, be aware.
I just knew that based on her sense of humor, it'd be fine. It went over okay. It was just mildly uncomfortable. Then for the bonus feature that night, the second one, the double feature, I picked a little film called The Outing from 1987. It's a beloved horror movie that people love called The Lamp.
Oh yeah.
And everyone loves it. And I had no idea that it has a freaking traumatic ass rape scene.
Oh, that's the worst.
In the movie. And bless my friend's wife's heart. And like her doctorate was like about rape in Vietnam during the Vietnam War.
Good
and
Lord.
I'm sitting with her like, yo, guys, this is ruining the movie for me.
Yes.
And I am, you know, I've probably talked about on the show before, not a big fan of sexy stuff in movies. But the thing I hate is a rape scene that has no point, that has no,
yes.
I'm not against the act being portrayed on film as long as it is either ridiculously punished, like over the top, cocks cut off, dudes getting their freaking nuts shot off, hilariousness, or you see consequences, or
right,
don't show the woman give in and get into it. I'm talking to you, Europe.
Yeah.
the European
straw dogs.
Dude, the European cut. Thank you. That boom right there. The European cut of Tombs of the Blind Dead, I never, ever reach for it. Ever. Yeah. Because
yeah, I know.
The lead actress gets raped and then she's buddy-buddy with the guy who did it the next scene.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, break. It's and I mentioned that in my book too. Like, whoa, this has like a bad sexual assault in it. Like, really double check your audience, or at least be aware of when it is in the film, so you can fast forward through it. Because oftentimes in exploitation films, it's just there. Yeah. Like, it just happens. Like, it's just like, oh, this is another bad thing that the bad guys did, and they're gonna get their comeuppance or whatever. But it's like, listen, we already knew they were bad guys.
It's not enough.
We were already on board. We already, yes, these are bad people. We don't need to go that far. Yeah. You know, that and animal violence will ruin the party.
I'm out. Like, and I am right. Totally, like, very few staged animal violence scenes get me. Like, it has to be, like, super emotionally invested in the story and emotionally invested in the animal, like that it's a cool dog or a cool muskrat or whatever. Those are fine. If it's obviously fake or the animal is obviously not in being scared out of its mind by the actor or actors, I can deal with that. It's because of all the Spanish. I've found that the Spaniards, bless their little hearts, in the 70s were worse than the Italians when it comes to animal violence. I have seen things that Spanish film directors, I'm guessing they're sociopaths.
Yep.
Like, I don't understand what they were doing, man.
Right. And it's like, how do you get your whole crew through that as well? Like, okay, this is the part where we're gonna like do this awful thing to this pet, and like there's like a whole crew of people making this film. Like, there has to be,
bless
like
them,
10 people that are just doing a job at least.
Yeah.
And they're all
the editor,
and they're all like, okay, yeah, so Monday's the day that we're gonna do that horrible thing that is just gonna be on my conscience until the day I die. Okay, like all right, see you Monday.
The editor is like, their hair turns white over the weekend working on the fucking footage.
Right. It's like, I need another edit of this horrible atrocity. No, you're not going to get one. I'm done with that. I'm never doing that again. Right. And so those things are noted in my book as well. Like, I try to remember your audience might be sensitive and you need to be aware of that. Like, you as the person, you might think that it's just like the bee's knees, and then you trot it out to somebody and they're like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, you need to, have some sense of like, I'm fine with this horrible thing on screen. It doesn't bother me, but you need to at least have the perspective of, you know, other people may not feel the same way, and you did invite them over, and maybe talk to them about it first.
Yes.
Or something. Like, exactly. I don't know. Like, hey, by the way, this movie we're going to watch has stuff like this in it. If that's going to bother you, I have an alternative that doesn't have those things in it.
Have a backup. Yeah.
So
I like it. So the last two films I have here are from the sci-fi volume of Awful Awesome. And the first one is like the most vanilla thing I've picked, I think. This is like super, super easy. People have probably heard of this or seen it. Frickin' Cyborg from 1989.
Oh, yeah.
That is one of my childhood favorites and continues to be a favorite into my adulthood.
Yeah, see, and I included that because it looks like a movie. Like, if you don't know, like, you're one of those people who doesn't really watch a lot of like cheesewad cinema, then you're going to think like, oh, Cyborg, that must be like a total awful, awesome movie. And it's like, it's not. It's a fun Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
It's solid. It works. It's a lot better than perhaps the poster suggests. it's fun, but it's not one that you're gonna sit around and like make a lot of comments with your friends with. Yeah. Because it's fun. Like it's fun, but very competent. It's not one of the ones that is going to be a laugh riot watching with your friends. I don't think, but you'll enjoy it, but not for awful, awesome reasons.
Cause am I misremembering that? Is that Albert Pune?
It is. Yes.
Okay. Cause he has shit that's way crazier.
Yes. He's very like hot and cold. Like some of his movies are frankly boring, and then other ones are very entertaining, you know? So he's one of those directors that's kind of like proceed with caution. It's like, some of them are fun.
I'm a big fan of Nemesis.
Yes. All those movies are ridiculous. The first one is great, is like legitimately like a lot of fun and great. And then all the sequels are just like, what am I watching? And
I have to get around to them someday.
And is there more?
please keep making them.
Yes. that one is it's very fun. Much like I think in my action one, I included Bloodsport. It's like Bloodsport is one of my favorite movies. Shut up. I would release it on the Criterion Collection. Like it's on my Mount Rushmore. Like I can watch that movie every day at all times. I once watched Bloodsport on our Spanish language channel because I was like, I know the story. I don't care that it's dubbed in Spanish. Like this movie rules. Like, but I included it because I feel like people would think, and like Killer Clowns from Outer Space as well. It's like, no, Killer Clowns from Outer Space is like legitimately fun and well-made and good, but people think it's an awful, awesome movie. So I include some of the films I included are like that too, that are like, yeah, you might think this is what it is. It's not. It's actually quite good and you should still watch it, but don't expect it to be an awful, awesome experience because that's not what it is.
You know, I've never seen Bloodsport.
Really? Oh my God.
I have no idea. That's one of those movies that people are like, oh, it used to be on all the time. And I'm like, what channel? I never caught it a single time.
I did. I live like 2.5 hours north of Los Angeles. And so we have like one or two different LA stations. And it was always the LA stations that showed the good stuff.
Nice.
Where they would show Bloodsport all the time, or like KTLA, or that was usually the one, or they would show The Thing all the time, or you know, nice. just movies that are just part of my DNA at this point. Bloodsport was definitely one of them. I absolutely adore that movie. I think it's pretty damn close to a perfect film.
Oh shit, dude, I'm gonna watch it.
In my opinion, anybody else watching it would be like, this is just another tournament movie, what are you talking about, you're crazy. But having seen it like perhaps an embarrassing amount of times, it's really lean and kind of perfect and really masterful in how it tells the story. Nice. Like it's just it's so good. The only misstep in the whole film, in my opinion, is the fact that he has a romantic there's a romantic angle to the film that it doesn't need at all, and even that is fine because you at least get to see Jean-Claude's butt.
And that's worth the price of admission right there.
Which he prominently does. It's hilarious. He's like pulling on his like banana hammock after having had what can only be assumed as being a fantastic lovemaking, which you don't see. You just see him pulling up his banana hammock from behind and you see his butt because he's got an impressive butt.
Boy.
And he loves showing.
He's always shaking it in other movies. I know that.
That's true. He, you know, when you got it.
I know. I mean, I know personally. So the final film is Night Beast from 1982. Oh. Another first time watch. I want to say, I think I saw it. I can't remember if it was this year. It was definitely a pandemic Blu-ray buy when, you know, we're not going out to eat. Got a little extra spending money for stupid shit. So I was able to get Night Beast sight unseen and jaw droppingly stupid and amazing.
It, It is so much fun. It's another one of the it's really what I look for. It's the type of film that I'm looking for where it's like a regionally made film. I think Don Doler was from Baltimore, and the Trauma Disc has like a whole documentary on it as well. It's called Blood, Boobs, and Beasts. Does that Blu-ray have that?
I'm sure ported all that stuff over. I didn't look at the extras yet, but
I hope so, because it's a great documentary where he talks about how, I think when he was like 30, he had been writing these magazines, like detailing like how to do different special effects. So like he kind of just figured stuff out on his own, as far as I can tell, as far as I know. Like he just figured out like makeup effects and all these things that you could do in your movie. And so he was putting out these zines that were explaining how to do it, but he had never made a movie. And he was working at like his family business, and somebody came in and robbed the place at gunpoint. And he like legitimately thought he could die. And after that experience, he said, well, life's too short. Here I am. I've been making these magazines. I've always dreamed about making a movie. I'm going to make a movie. And so that's why he got started making films. And Night Beast was not his first film. He made films before that. But that one is just so much fun, with like the sheriff with his man perm, and like and the incredibly awkward sex scene that's in the film. And you could tell that nobody was happy about it, including Don Doler. Like, famously, I think in that documentary, he mentions that the woman in the film in that lovemaking scene was his mother's hairdresser.
Oh boy!
And so like this is like someone who like does his mom's hair all like regularly and has for years. And so he was essentially told by a distributor, like, you got to get the 3 B's, and your other films are lacking on the nudity, and you need to get that in the film. And so he had to awkwardly ask her, like, hey, is this something that you'd be willing to do? Cause it would really help me get this movie distributed. And she was willing to do it, but he was incredibly uncomfortable doing it, because he knew her, and like she knew his mom, and it was just like, and so nobody was happy. Like nobody in the room was like having fun at all. Like everybody was like, "Oh, like can we just get this over with?" And it feels that way. It feels that way very much so. But I love Don Doler. His other films are fun as well. They have that same let's just throw together what we have available and let's make it happen, which I love. I love that feeling, especially when you get like the feeling that like maybe like a whole town got together to make the movie. Like the director was able to convince like a lot of people who have no business doing anything with filmmaking to be involved, and they all just had a blast. Cool. Like, you know, Night Beast is definitely a film that it doesn't feel like it was trying to like fill a quota. It was trying to fulfill a dream, and it feels that way, which makes it a lot more enjoyable to watch, I think. And his other films as well, they have that same. He basically remade it. Like Night Beast is essentially a remake of one of his previous films. Like, he was just like, I'm gonna do the same thing again, but I'm gonna do it
just
better.
Like Jess Franco.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, he sadly ended up he had cancer. I think that's what he died from. He's no longer alive. Mm. And similarly, he was like, you know what? I know my time is limited. I'm not going to make any more movies. I'm going to spend time with my family, and that's it. And I appreciate that too, that he was like, no, I'm not going to spend my last remaining year on Earth trying to make a movie. I'm going to spend time with my family while I still can, which is just like, could you be any cooler, Don Doler? I don't think you can. Like, he's
nice.
Just a remarkable guy.
Awesome. Well, dude, those are my picks, and let's wrap this puppy up.
Okay. One thing I have to say, however, is I did hear on a recent, well, I don't know, I guess it wasn't a recent episode, but you said you would never, ever watch a Neil Breen movie ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you, you got to reconsider.
Creeps me out.
You can't watch. Oh, yes. Creeps me out. He's very creepy.
So I'll never watch The Room. I can't.
I understand not wanting to watch The Room because that one's like very hyperbolic in people's reaction to it. Like it's listen, The Room is okay. It's fine.
Oh no, it's not about the film. It's because of what's his face?
Tommy Wiseau. I met him.
I can't.
I actually met him. I went to one of his screenings and
he creeps me out. So
yeah,
bad.
He wouldn't let me, like I got a photo with him and he wouldn't let me leave until I shook his hand.
Okay.
Which was kind of odd. Yeah. And I have a friend that worked on a film with him and he told me all kinds of stuff and just like nothing necessarily bad. Just like they're like, yeah, that's just, yeah, that's him. Like that's
he's
him.
Just crazy.
That's
okay.
him all
that's,
the
that's
time.
Better.
Like that's who he is. He's not putting it on like that's unless he's really committed to that role. Like it's not a put on like that's just who he is.
That's Tommy.
That's him. No, Neil Breen is a total weirdo. He definitely is. My friends and I have talked about how they really need to make a movie together, except they probably murder each other because they're both egomaniacs. Neil Breen's something else, man. Like he put out like a 5.5-hour DVD on how to make a movie.
Whoa, nice.
And it, like it's him and you have to pay like some exorbitant amount of money, like $150 for the set. And it's
wow.
And it's like unbelievably long and it's just him talking about it's apparently not even really helpful. Like it's just it's very, very strange. Not every single one of his movies is fantastic, but I'm just so fascinated with him and his process and
right.
that he doesn't seem like he knows people watch his movies that they're like me, like they enjoy them on a perverse level, I suppose.
Of course.
But he also believes that people genuinely enjoy them as well. And when I mention a vanity film, every single one of his films is the most vanity. They're the most vain films you could possibly. Every woman wants to sleep with him.
Yep. Yep.
And he's usually some sort of quasi godlike figure. He's also like a hacker and he's also trying to reveal the truth that the world is very corrupt and that all those people should be brought to justice. And it's just. It's wild. Again, a friend of mine, he said he recognized one of the actresses in one of Neil Breen's films. He said, "Oh my God, I know her. I've worked with her. I'm going to hit her up about this because my friend's also an actor and a director. He makes small budget movies." And he said, apparently she told him that he had like no personality.
Oh God.
She said like he just didn't seem to have like any kind, like there was nothing to hang. There was like nothing to hang your hat on.
Wow.
The only thing she said was that he was very particular and that all the women on the film had to wear this particular top, like this particular like spaghetti strap top.
No.
And that all of them had to like have like the top few buttons unbuttoned.
Oh, no.
Like that was some. And then we noticed we were like, oh, my God, that's totally the case. Like they are all wearing the same shirt and they're all unbuttoned. So that was, and she was just like, yeah, I don't know. He was just kind of odd and he didn't really have much of a personality and it was just a very weird experience. And she also felt that it was strange that he was so particular about those buttons. Like it was like he had a thing for it.
Oh boy.
His first film, there's a bunch of credits in the film. And then at the end, it says all credits that begin with the letter like N and B are fictitious and were made up by Neil Breen. Like it says that in the credits, like he put together a list of fake, like a fake caterer and a fake like car rental company
right.
and a fake and like and then he outs himself on his own credits.
Why did he
I do don't that? Know. Like maybe he thought that those like you had to have those like, well,
it's
like,
legal.
Yes, like you have to have them in. I don't know. I don't.
The legal department.
I don't know.
And, you know, I do respect the fact that he's made 1,000 more films than
yeah.
I have or ever
yeah.
will. And it's incredible that he's like an auteur.
Yes. He's also very specific about like if you screen his film, let's say you have a theater and you want to screen his film.
Right.
He's going to send you a disc. Now, and when he sells his movies, they're just like crappy DVD-Rs that come in a jewel case. And they have
nice.
No art and he charges like $35 for them. And right. when you screen one of his films, you have to show him photographic evidence that you destroyed his disc.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That could be the big thing at the end, is all the people rush up to help destroy the disc.
Like you have to like
have the audience
like
do
it. He's seemingly like very hostile about you showing his movie. Like he's like it's a negotiation that it's apparently not easy. And then I'll send you the disc for the movie that you're going to show, but you have to break it and you have to show me that you book it, 'cause I'm really concerned right. about pirating.
Well, that's good trying to control it. That's good. That's not effective in this day and age. But.
Exactly. It's like, well, I could have just ripped it and then broke the discs. I mean,
no one would ever do that, though. That's against the rules, yeah. Bruh. I will, for you, begin to consider maybe watching one of his films.
I would recommend Fateful Findings, I think.
Fateful Findings before yep. I leave this mortal coil, which is hopefully sooner than later.
Yes, I think Fateful Findings would be a good one to go with. My friends and I have just – I showed the preview of his first film, Double Down, and we laughed so hard at the preview that I legitimately thought that I was going to hurt myself. I was laughing and also concerned yep. at the same time that I'm like, I'm going to rip my gut. Like I'm literally going to bust yeah. a gut. Like this is bad.
Usually a Jeffrey movie, I will scream laugh into my hand, and then I'll look at my poor wife who's sitting next to me, and I have to apologize for how horribly loud my guffaw scream was. And usually there's a little tightness in the throat afterwards because I have lost my fucking mind.
Well, you know, someday when you're ready to break down and watch one, we will have to discuss it, and you have to.
Yeah. Oh, you'll be the first to know. We'll cover it.
Well, it needs to be me, you, and Jeffrey, because like he needs to get in on that party too.
I'm sure Jeffrey's probably watching one of Neil Breen's movies right now.
They are something. They can also be unbelievably boring if you're not watching them with somebody.
Yeah, alone would be bad.
It would be bad. It would be very bad. Like you can't. That's one of those ones where you got to like hold someone's hand tight and you got to get through it together.
Well, maybe their hand. Folks, you can find Awful Awesome Action, Horror and Sci-Fi, the first volumes one of all, each of them have their own volume one right now, Amazon.com. Jacob Gustafson, thank you for hanging out, dude. It has been way too long.
Yes, thank you for having me. I was very excited when you sent the invite, and I'm glad that we were able to make it happen, because this has been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I haven't podcasted in forever.
Yes, you're making it the biggest and longest talking in anyone's pants area or slacks.
Yep. Depending on when you're listening to this. Yep.
I'm a morning guy in the pants and a night guy in the slacks. I think that's my new slogan. Oh boy. Folks, I'm going to go now, and Jacob's going to go too. So bye.
This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.